Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 4th, 2014. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott, the amazing Kreskin Long.
How are you doing this, buddy?
Yes, I'm coming to you from the cruise in the past. So I will, at the end of the show, for those that listen, I will give you this week's lottery numbers.
This is incredible. I mean, it's not like you're calling me from the Mexican Riviera or nothing. How are we doing this?
Yeah, this show is costing us 75 cents a minute. No. We're recording early because I am currently, by the time you're listening to this, the Antigua Poker Cruise sailing out of Los Angeles. I mean, I'm sure we're having a fantastic time. Uh-huh. Three Mexican ports, so three opportunities for me to get tattoos.
The rest of the letters to Antigua.
But yes, I will regale you with tales from the cruise next week, which is actually 2 weeks from now, on our April 11th show. But why don't we get this in the can so we keep the streak alive. But in real time, once I get off the cruise, I will be flying up to San Francisco. We have a next Antigua Poker Tour event at the 101 Casino in Petaluma, just north of San Francisco. It's going to run April 7th through the 13th. I'll be there the entire time. I plan to play all the lead-up events, so if you win some easy money, come out and play this event, say hi, and then, of course, I'll be on site for the main event. Hold'em Radio will be there broadcasting live on day two of the main event, so that's a lot of fun as well, too. So come out and see us play, and remember, if you win the main event, you will appear on the cover of the main issue, no matter how pretty or ugly you are. So this is an opportunity to come out and play. I think it's a $400 buy-in for the main event, so really affordable way of getting on the cover. So go to anteuppokertour.com for all the details, and hope to see you up in Petaluma.
All right, so here's the deal. What's the over-under on something major happening while we're off the air? Because that inevitably happens every time we tape early. We'll put the show in the can, and then Black Friday happens, somebody dies, somebody cheats. Something big is going to happen during this week. What's it going to be? What's the over-under on that actually happening?
Well, nothing big in poker ever happens in April.
I know, that's what I'm saying. This is crazy. Something's going to happen. I feel terrible. Something is definitely going to happen, but we'll figure it out. Maybe Scott's head will explode from all of his...
Maybe I'll get over this pollen.
There's pollen crap.
Mexico, I hope, right?
Oh, man. Unbelievable. It's actually been affecting me, too. Not as bad as you. You've got it worse than I do, but it's pretty brutal down here. See, and you think that it's all paradise down here in Florida. And it's not. Every once in a while, you got to deal with the stuffy nose.
Yeah. I mean, there's no snow. That's right. There's no snow. So it's wonderful down here.
we'll take the stuffy nose once in a while for no snow.
All right, well, we can fill every show talking about the great columns from our strategy writers right at Ante Up. But I trust that most of our listeners read the magazine and see them, so, we don't need to hit them over the head with that. But please come on our Ante Up Cruises at anteupcruises.com or go to the Ante Up Poker Tour at anteupokertour.com. Otherwise, we don't want to be salesmen on here, right?
Right.
But every once in a while, there's a column that I read that I really feel like we need to discuss on the show because it's just... It's a concept that I think people miss. It's easy to get, but it's something that I think our listeners really need to know. So in case they missed it, and that's the case this week. In our April issue, which is shipped already to 280 poker rooms coast to coast.
Right.
And remember, you can see it online at anteupmagazine.com/magazine. This column from David Apostolico. It's on page 45, so you check that out. But it's a column I'd like for all of our listeners to read. He writes this month about quote-unquote hero calls, where players know their opponent is bluffing, so they call them just to show the table how smart they are, even though their hand is weaker, and they lose the pot. And I gotta say, Chris, I see this all the time.
Yeah.
I think poker players just can't help but try to let anyone who listens know how smart they are at the table, even if it costs them money. And that's the whole reason you're at the table, right? It's to win.
Yeah, not to show you're smart, to show that you can win money.
It just, it hurts in so many ways, but I see players that just can't get away from this. They have to, oh, hey, I figured out this because you played this and this, so I'm going to call. And the guy's like, yeah, you got to be right. Turn the hands. He's like, well, yeah, but I got douche tray, so I can't win. But
but I wanted to pay you 50
I'm glad
bucks.
That I got the right, right?
The show you I was right.
Really, I mean, honestly, I'm asking, I'm having a little fun here, but I'm asking, what is the point of that? You know, because we always have those kind of aha moments at the table where we realize the concepts that we read in books or the magazine or even crazy stuff that Scott and Chris taught us at Idiot Poker Cat. You actually see at the table. And or, you know, a good example is Joe Navarro, the tells, right?
Yeah.
Spot a tell and you figure it out. I mean, it's so hard from human nature to want to say, you know, I called you because you had happy feet. But why do you want to do that? So, and that's what's so difficult. And I think that separates some of the good players from the normal players is the ability to just keep that inside, not have the table hoist you up like Phil Hellmuth and regale you. But later, go back and tell your buddies the story or whoever else will listen later on that doesn't cost you money. But this just this urge to let the players at the table know that you're better than them. And I think it's got to stop. I think players lose too much money that way.
Well, here's – I got a little solution here. If David's column has fallen on blind eyes and Scott's little rant here has fallen on deaf ears – I've got a solution for you. Think to yourself how much you're willing to pay at a poker table to prove that you're right, even though you know you can't win. You're going to lose that money. Think about how much money you're willing to put in the middle, cut it in half, send me the check, and send me a little statement that says E equals MC squared. That is a correct formula. You would be right, and you can send me less money than you would have to put out at a poker table calling with the inferior hand, even though you knew that you would put it all together, that you were smart, that you got it right. So I'll save you money by doing this way. Just send me a little piece of paper that says something correct on it. Send me half the money, and you can feel great about yourself, and you'll have that much more money in your pocket. Duh. I mean, it just sounds so silly that people would consider calling for no reason. It's one thing if you're ahead of the range that you put them on and, you know, and you have a chance of winning and you're statistically you're way ahead or something. But it's another thing to be, you know, when I first started teaching my wife how to play poker, she at first didn't understand what I meant by you don't have to have it to go all in, but you have to have it to call the all in. And for the longest time, she didn't understand what I was talking about. She didn't figure it out. And then it finally clicked for her. Same thing here. You don't have to have, you know, the best hand to go all in. But if you don't have the best hand that you put them on, if your hand can't beat the one you put them on, you don't call. And it just makes no sense. And people do it all the time. It's crazy.
Now, I will admit that, you know, this is a game of multiple levels. So if you think that by doing this and realizing the players at the table will realize, agree with you, that you really put it together, you're really freaking smart, it might pay dividends throughout your session. But that's about the extent of where I'm going to go and where I agree with this. The rest of it is, like I said, you know, just be happy internally that you're smart and you know something that the other players at the table don't. Crush that table, get up, and then you know, write us at Andy up if you don't have anybody else to hang out with, or go to your home game and brag about it, or go to a whole other table where you're just playing like 2-4 limit and chasing the jackpot, and tell them how smart you are. But just don't do it with the people that you're trying to take their money from.
No, and then just to take your point a little bit further. When you say, you know, there might be some value in it, if people can see how good you are by what you've declared to them and you lose some money to it, you can also do that without losing money.
That's true, too.
You know, like, you can fold a hand. Like, if it comes ace, rag, rag, you have ace, queen, and somebody shoves, and you know it's ace, king by the way the hand came down, you can say, I know you got ace, king there, so I'm folding this. And you show the ace, queen.
Yep, fold face up.
And a lot of times, too, they'll show the ace, king, and now you're a genius. I mean, I remember that happened to me once at Immokalee when you and I were down there, and you made that awesome run and cast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was a hand where I was playing against a woman, and I did something very similar. It might have been ace-jack that I showed, but I'm like, you obviously have ace-king here. I can't call. And I showed my ace-jack, and she goes, wow. And she showed up ace-king, and they were a lot more impressed than they should have been. But they were, and everybody was like, whoa. And I used that as leverage later when people knew that I could figure things like that out. I went a lot further because of that. So I don't do it anymore. Right, I don't do it anymore, but they didn't cost me any money to do it. It didn't cost me any chips in the tournament. So, yeah, don't do it for ego. I mean, everybody has an ego in poker, but to lose money to your ego, that's stupid. You know, there's something to paying for information. You know, like Negroni would kiss a stack of chips and throw it in the middle because he wants to. But a half heart of him, too, is hoping he's ahead when he does that, too, by
sure,
the way.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, but, yeah, there's just no way that I would lose money just to show you that I'm right. That's stupid. Not that I want to call our readers and listeners stupid, but it's true. If you're doing that, you're wasting money and you're in the game for the wrong reason.
Totally agree.
Yeah, it was a good column, though. Definitely read it, everybody. Everybody read that column.
All right, well, you know, the last couple, I guess it's been a couple months now, we've discussed these chip gates, I guess, because everything's a gate now, right?
Gate, yeah.
At least here in America. You know, they had the guy introduced the fake chips, the Borgata, right? And these two absolute clowns at Maryland Live that fake chips that were so easy to spot. And then, of course, the guy down at Palm Beach Kennel Club that, if you believe his story, took a chip off the table for a souvenir. So, you know, our discussion, I think, was about the fact that these kind of scenarios, particularly the fact that they're clubbed all together, is going to force poker rooms, at least especially the bigger ones that run around the tournaments, to really don't redouble their efforts to make sure that their tournaments are run with integrity, right? And ultimately, the danger, I think, for players in that is that the cost of doing that are going to be passed on to them, which is back to my reason why I just don't take this chip off the table. Buy a t-shirt, right? All right, so as part of this, I had a really fascinating discussion of this last trip with the poker room manager, who is tiptoeing, I like to say, into research for applications for RFID chips, right? You know what these are?
Yeah, those are the ones that there's something in the chip so you can determine where they are, what denomination they are, how long they are, you know, whatever. So they can totally tell what they are just by them being in the presence of this thing that can detect what they are.
Yeah, it's amazing technology now. They're using it for all kinds of stuff. In fact, it's about 2 years late, but they're putting them on luggage now, so you, when some idiot steals your luggage in Las Vegas, you don't have to spend the next multi-city business trip, you know, wearing the Walmart shirt, right? But it's really cool. I mean, these RFID chips can be really small. So, I mean, they can put them right now. The applications of poker, they're using RFID tables, so, you know, cards are embedded with them. So, you know, if you're doing, like, these live streams, you don't have to use the whole card cameras anymore. The information is automatically transmitted to the folks, you know, doing the analysis. They're really kind of cool stuff. It's one of the things that I thought might happen with chips is they're going to – so anyhow, I was talking to this guy about it. And to be honest, I really couldn't wrap my head around the actual real-life applications that players would find cool about this. I mean, just the fact that technology in general is cool. So I think people might think that's cool. But the actual real applications, I didn't really fully understand until talking to this manager. So here's a couple of things that I thought were interesting, and maybe it's just me. But he said for cash games, because, you know, we're always thinking about tournament chips for this, right? But
yeah,
they would put them in the cash game chips. And some of the things that they could do, or at least are possible, I would say, is that it could automatically calculate the pot for the dealers. Stress just the dealers, so they're not going to have a display on the table that's going to count the pot, because obviously part of poker is being able to count the pot yourself as a player and understand it, right?
Right.
But think about that. If the dealer had like a little readout that only he or she could see, one, it would make that dealing PLO a whole lot quicker, right?
Yeah.
And so you get more hands. But also, from an operator standpoint, it's going to make sure that the rake is correct and take it all the time. And it's also going to make it quicker. Everything is going to be quicker. based on that. So you're going to get a lot more hands per hour in, which is good for everyone. I mean, it's good for the poker room because they make more rake. It's good for players because you get to play more hands, right? So that's a very simple thing they can do. And then it also speeds up cash out. So, you know, right now you walk up to the cashier, right? You put your chips down and they cut it out and then count it two or three times and then they pay you out, right? You just put it on the tray there and boop, the display is automatically going to say $1,460. And you know it's going to be accurate.
Because that's what I always cash out for.
Exactly, absolutely. you know, on bad days, of course.
Yeah.
And so it's going to cut down on mistakes there, and it's going to speed up the cash out line, too, which would have been great going back. Remember the old days in Florida when the room closed, like, at midnight every night? And you had the last hand at, like, 40 tables got up at once to cash out, and the line took forever?
Yeah.
That would have been great to have RFID for that. So that's kind of cool. I mean, I had never thought about it from the cash game standpoint. And then for tournaments, I did ask about tournaments because I was like, all right, how are you going to know? Obviously, the chips that you have in play have the RFID chips in it, right? But if somebody could introduce a chip, which is what the concern was in, well, obviously, definitely was the reality in Borgata, the concern in Palm Beach, right? If somebody introduces a chip to the tournament, it doesn't have an RFID chip, so it's not going to... How do you know that happened, right?
Right, it's not going to read it.
So the answer really was that you've got a running total of how many chips are in play. So if somebody takes a chip off the table, you're going to know that now there's a chip missing. If you're watching it, right?
Right.
Now you still have to figure out who did it. So, I mean, it's not a perfect situation. Introducing it's a little bit harder, but if you get down to, you know, countdowns on breaks and things, and there's too many chips, then you're going to know, right? So it's not perfect, but it does aid in some situations. But certainly from a cash game standpoint, I think there's some very interesting things that could come from RFID chips.
I wonder if you did a pure cost analysis on it, though, if it would be worth it.
That's interesting you brought that up, because I asked about that. And there's still a lot of math to be crunched, but right now, this particular manager is thinking that there's a case to be made to his bosses that from the cash game standpoint, not the tournaments, the cash game standpoint, that the money you would save by getting the rate correctly, the more hands are going to be dealt, the less time waiting in the cashier line will actually pay for the chips at that point over a very brief period of time, and certainly long-term will.
I'd really like to see that. Because just being a skeptic as I am, when I'm playing PLO, and we always have, the only time I ever play it is in the home game when we're idiots or when we're on the ship when our dealers are awesome. And the dealers know the pot instantly. I have never, ever had to wait for a dealer to tell me what's in the pot, ever. I mean, like, ever. So maybe I just got lucky.
Right, but
I don't know.
That's a small piece of it. I mean, I mentioned that just because I thought that was the coolest part.
Even like cashing out, how are they losing money when people are standing in line to cash out?
All right, so those you pick up on the two smallest parts. I think the bigger part.
Give me the bigger part.
The bigger part is getting the rake correct each time.
The rake.
And
okay.
Reminding players or the dealers to take the rake.
Okay. So like a red light might go off, say, hey, you didn't take an
offer.
It's
like
okay.
The Chris Cassenza on the Eddie of Cruz. You know,
yeah, yeah.
It's the person that makes sure the rake is getting tight.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So
So that's the bigger deal.
Think about that. If you know if the dealer shorts the rake, and I'm not saying anything nefarious about it, but you know you just
even you by accident, out. It just could be by
right.
Accident.
You do a rounding error or something like that, right. And you know you take a dollar less, four or five pots an hour. You know, that's $5 times 40 tables. That's you know, and you just add it up. And I think the cost was to add the RFID chip is about 50 cents a chip is what I think I understand. So, I mean, obviously, it's probably, a good ship is going to cost about a dollar, maybe a little less normally. So it's, a 33% increase in your cost, which obviously is significant. But you can see where that, over time, not like the first week you're not going to pay for it. But over time, it actually has the potential of helping to pay down that cost, if not completely.
Sure. Oh, no, absolutely. I was trying to see how the other scenarios paid money, but...
They're small. Not that you want to lay anybody off, but I mean, you could do with one cashier instead of two, I guess, if cash out lines go quicker, you know. So, I mean, you got that kind of cost involved. You know, I mean, those are just a couple of the applications. I mean, really, it's like anything else with computers and technology now. I mean, right now it's so kind of new. I know there's a lot of listeners going, RFID has been out new. But, I mean, the poker application, it's relatively new now. That once you get in there, you know, it could be you're going to find new applications that are going to
start. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it could be something, too, where, I mean, you could always be tied to your player club card, too.
Yeah.
You know, and you talked about, you know, even the chips can be registered to you. So if you drop them on the way to the cashier, and, you know, they'll know where they are, and they can get them back to the rightful owner without, you know, which doesn't obviously save the room anything, but, you know, makes players feel more comfortable playing there.
Yeah, secure.
The more people play comfortable there, the more players play, the more money you make. So there's all kinds of ways of looking at it. Now, this particular manager did acknowledge that he has to figure out a way to make it worthwhile, or financially worthwhile to the room from a tournament standpoint. But I think that gets back to the whole thing that we started this whole conversation with is tournament integrity. You know, eventually, I think, continue to still have these problems in rooms with chips that players are going to gravitate to the rooms that they see are making significant efforts to make sure the tournament is run correctly. And so that's a little harder one from a spreadsheet standpoint. But I think from a real world situation, there is a financial benefit to having the most secure game in the area.
Well, you know what else could happen is the gaming boards could find out about this technology and see all these black eyes that poker is getting from these poker chip crap, and then they would say, sorry, by year 2016, you all have to have RFID chips, and here's the plan in place.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it forces them to do it, and then it's a much better scenario for everyone because they have to pay for it, and they have to do it. Just like, hey, sorry, you have to have two cameras on every tournament table instead of one, or, you know what I mean, whatever their, you know, some of their stuff is just totally irrational, but that's what they come up with, and you're forced to do it, so it could end up happening where we're forced to do these
things. Yeah, it just makes everything better. You know, another thing, too, is, you know, it helps encourage or discourage the dishonest players from playing in a room.
Yeah.
You know, if you're heavy on RFID, we talked about, you know, you could put a, you know, they could have, like, you know, those sensors, like when you go out of a store, you know, and they don't take the tag off your shirt, and it goes off. You can do the same thing with the RFID chip. If it's a tournament chip, I mean, you can't, no tournament chips can leave the property.
Right.
They leave the property and the buzzer goes off.
Right.
And even said, even if you don't want to activate it, you can put a sign up that says that it's there.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe do one every once in a while just to show people that it exists. You know, that's going to, you know, the word's going to get out to the people that are the bad eggs. Because, again, if you're a bad egg, you're going to go where, you know, you can get away with it.
That's right.
Or where the money's really big, which I think is the case. I mean, I don't want to, that statement almost made it sound bad for the properties that have dealt with this. But that's mostly because they had such big tournaments. But, you know, anything you do to get the bad eggs out of your room is a benefit, you know, because players are going to want to play where they know that those players aren't made to be, aren't not only not made to feel welcome, but also it makes it much more difficult for them to do what they do.
Yeah, and bad eggs smell really bad, too. You know,
of course, absolutely.
You don't want to play somebody who needs to get himself some clean, as Scott likes to say. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who has called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. It comes from Bill Galantine. He says, thoughts on Bovada Poker, which is one of the online sites that still accepts U.S. players? I recently put some money in there, and I am slightly worried something might happen, and I could lose it like Black Friday.
What's ever going to happen at poker on April?
Yeah, it's April. Who cares?
you know, this is an interesting question, because it's almost kind of like, to me, and I'm not picking on Bill at all, so please, Bill, don't think I am. It's almost surprising that we get this question now, because I just, to me, it's like, this far past Black Friday now, I think you've got two groups of players. You got players like me and you that just, you know, we're not even worried about online poker anymore. You know, at least playing. You know, we're going to wait till it's regulated and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Just going to give it up on it. And then you'd have the other players just, like, never really cared. And as soon as, you know, Full Tilt and PokerStars got shut down, they went to Carbon or Rabata or whatever and continued to play. And you know, no big deal to them, right? It's kind of odd to me that there's still players that now are still weighing whether they should play all these online sites or not. Okay, but that's not his question. So I guess to the answer, which shouldn't surprise anybody that's listening to the show, this is the Wild Wild West again, right?
Yeah.
You know, so my advice is, if you're playing on an unregulated site, do not put anybody on there that you would be upset if you wake up in the morning and it's gone. Because we just don't know what's going to happen. At this point, it's been so long since the last raid that it almost feels like the fad is over for the government.
Yeah.
But who knows? They could be some of these. They could just take longer to build a case against these other ones. So I certainly don't think I would not take for granted the fact that it's been a couple of years since Black Friday, and that the sites that are still servicing U.S. players are in the clear. I just think that's foolish. So if you're going to play on there, have fun. But, you know, whether it's $20, $100,000, whatever you put on there, as long as it's money that, you know, hey, you can wake up tomorrow, it's gone, and you're fine with that, then great. What's the harm?
Exactly. That was the exact answer I was going to give. There's just no way I would put money on there that would upset me if I lost it at this point. And the other thing, too, is you don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they could get a stick up their butt and want to do something to the players this time. You never know. I mean, especially since you've gotten that scare already from Black Friday and Black Monday and all that. So, really, I mean, if you're that hard up to play, then at least put money on that you don't care about, that doesn't raise any kind of flags with anyone else either. But I would hate to have money on a site knowing that the DOJ on a rainy day could be bored and say, you know what, let's go after these last two and just really wrap it up and get them out of the market before the government approves everything else, you know, or whatever. So, who knows? I wouldn't want to risk losing money for no reason. It's just like, you know, calling people when you know you're wrong, but you know you're right, but you know you can't beat them. You know, why waste that money? There's just no reason to.
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer because, you know, there are players that aren't as lucky as us that, live, you know, where a legal poker room is 5 minutes from our house, or we have a regular home game where we play, or travel the country like I do, get to play. So, you know, if you're stuck in one of these areas that the closest casino is 4 hours away, you don't have anybody for the home game, and this is your only way of playing competitively because you don't want to play these free sites where no one takes it seriously, that's difficult. And I don't know if that's Bill's case or not, but I would say if that's not your case, then at this point I think it's just the headache just isn't worth it.
And the worrying,
to
too.
Play somewhere else.
All that worrying, too. You never know. And for what? I mean, you're going to put $20 on there or something, or $50, that's something. But if you're going to put like a grand on there to play, you know, $10, $20 or something, that's just crazy.
But even that $20, I mean, what is $20 going to do? I mean, again, you're back. If you're only putting $20 on there, you're the type of player that will be fine playing the free play sites, right?
Yeah.
It's probably really not that big a deal, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking 100 or 200 or 500, then it's a whole different story. But, you know, $20, you're probably playing, what, 1 cent, 2 cent?
Yeah.
Or, you know, $1 sit and goes at most. You know, the play of those aren't all that different than what you're going to play on free play sites. So, yeah, free play sites, you don't have to worry about losing any money.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. And we'll have Anteup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This comes from our friend Vic. He says, I was playing in a 1-2 no-limit cash game, and the dealer was dealing her first shift ever and had many, many mistakes in her first hour. The under-the-gun player folds, the next player raises to $10, the next two players call, and the next player folds. At this point, the small blind announces that he was dealt 3 cards. The dealer looks confused and obviously doesn't know what to do. The big blind says it's a misdeal and mucks his cards, and another player mucks as well. The dealer drops the stub and starts to rake in the mucked cards. The 3 players with $10 in the pot say it is not a misdeal since there has been substantial action. The floor says it's the player's responsibility to protect their hand, and this includes making sure they have the correct number of cards. Since there has been action, the hand is live. Some of the players who tossed their cards in prematurely now reach out to grab them back, but it's not 100% clear which cards are theirs. drawing protests from the players and still have cards in their hand. The floor now notices that the dealer was not holding onto the stub and changes his ruling, saying that since the stub has been compromised, that it's a missed deal. Bets are returned and the hand is redealt to the dismay of the three $10 bettors. Couldn't the stub and mucked cards have been reshuffled and the hand continued? And a larger question, what responsibility does a floor or card room have when breaking in a new dealer?
All right, Sam says, this is a tough situation. Like I've said before in other scenarios, I remind dealers that when they see something that is not ordinary in the hand of poker, everything needs to immediately freeze and the floor needs to be called. Never, ever drop the deck. This could have easily been remedied. Unfortunately, when the deck has been mixed in with the muck cards, we cannot shuffle those cards back into the deck. We can never add cards that have been dealt players into what could be the flop, turn, or river. It changes the possible outcome of the hand, and we have to just refund the player's money to them and move on to a new hand. As far as break and dealer protocol, it varies from room to room. Accidents do happen, and it's very hard to predict how anybody's going to react when they are in one of these situations. It's very easy to panic and make a bad situation into a worse one. All I can advise is to please be patient with new dealers. If multiple errors are happening, please just step away from the table and quietly notify the floor so they can monitor the situation.
This reminds me of the hand that TJ Cloutier loves to talk about.
Yes.
Where the guy mucks his tens, and the only way for a person to win the hand is if he hits the case 10. That's not a case 10 because it's in someone's hand, but then they folded it and it got reshuffled into the deck, and yep. Then he hits the 10. So in that case, the cards that were out got put into the deck again and reshuffled. So that probably was a mistake, according to what Sam says.
Yeah.
Right? That probably should not have happened for that. That's the worst beat in history, like I've ever heard of,
right,
ever.
Right.
And it shouldn't even have happened. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's too bad that she let the stub go. Otherwise, you know, none of this would have been an issue. But and then saw the guys reaching for their cards to take them back. You can't do that. I mean, what are you doing? So.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple things from a player responsibility here. I mean, obviously this dealer, as Vic says, a break-in dealer is new, is flustered. That's frustrating from a player standpoint, don't get me wrong. But again, there are things that are out of your control as a player, and there's things that are in your control as a player. So I think the best thing you can do at a table is maintain the things that are in your control, and then just hope that the things that are out of your control don't adversely affect you.
Right.
So in this case, when somebody that's not the dealer says it's a missed deal, or if in your mind you think there's a possibility that it wouldn't be a missed deal, I am holding on to those cards with a kung fu G.I. Joe grip, right?
Yeah.
Dealer's got to pry them out of my hands. And that's the case here. Players were just like lemmings, and I don't say that critically. I just think that just happens. But they're like, oh, somebody's a missed deal? Okay. And they toss the cards in. I never toss my cards in until I see the dealer actually turn to me and say, you know, sure, it's a missed deal.
Yeah.
And I fully understand the situation because I don't want to be in a situation, particularly if I, let's say I have pocket aces, I don't want to mock them if I don't have to, right?
Right.
You know, I'm probably going to call for them. Even if the dealer response seems completely plausible, I'm still going to call for the floor. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know, it's a learning experience, right?
Right, if nothing else. Right.
And you don't know. So I don't have a lot of compassion for the players that just blindly folded their cards, even though the situation obviously wasn't their fault, because they gave up control of what they could control. I think it's tough with the break-in dealers. I mean, this is a tough thing for kind of a Sam to answer, because obviously he's been a director of poker operations, and this is kind of the ongoing problem we have with Call of the Floor, where it seems like it's this management versus players kind of thing, particularly when it comes to dealer error. But what I would add to that is, you know, we're all new at our jobs at some point, right?
Yeah.
We all made terrible mistakes. You know, some jobs, you can make a terrible mistake, it's not that big a deal. You know, if you make a wrong hamburger at McDonald's, you just throw it away and make another 46-cent hamburger and give it to the person, right?
Yeah.
First day of the job is a brain surgeon, you cut somebody's brain out, that's a bigger problem, right? Yeah, this is somewhere in between, but I do think you just gotta, you know, relax and take it up, take it as it goes. And I think Sam gave really the best advice. It's not just to sit there and suffer if somebody's just having a bad day, but to quietly get away and let the floor know. It's like, you know, hey, I know people gotta break in. She's obviously having a tough time. Maybe, you know, she could benefit by, or he or benefit, whoever it is, could be benefit. Would be better if you took them out of the box for half an hour and just let them calm down and collect themselves and put them back in, rather than leaving them there to continue to make mistakes for the rest of the down. But again, that's one of the things that's out of your control. You know, you can't control who's in the box, but you can control whether you sit there at the table and play too, right? So, or whether you go and be proactive about letting somebody know. Because, you know, again, you know, if every table had a floor and a dealer, I mean, the rake would be $12 a hand, right? So, you know, good floors are going to keep moving around the room, particularly if they know they have break-in dealers and watch them, but they can't be everywhere at once. So, you know, they kind of depend on the players to kind of let them know what's going on.
Absolutely.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Zorag is back.
We haven't heard from him in
quite a while, at least on the show. And he's got a hand for your favorite game, Limit Omaha 8.
I'm all in. Can I go all in this game? Because that's what I want
to
do.
Actually, he was trying to be a little funny, but I'm saving you from that.
Thank you.
He wanted me to say, I'm under the gun at 9-handed, 1-2, crappy, no limit hold'em cash game. I have squiggly 150. I've dealt 7 of spades, deuce of hearts. And then I let you rant. And then we say bolt.
What a nice guy.
That's not the real
guy. He's such a nice guy.
Isn't he, though? All right, so we're playing 4-8 limit Omaha 8, which kills the 6-12.
Okay.
Hero bought it for 200, just scooped a squiggly $60 pot, and the kill is on him, and he's under the gun plus 2. And for folks that haven't played kills in some rooms, and particularly this one, it sounds like, if you're on the kill, you're last act. So it doesn't matter where the blinds are, the action starts to the left of you, right?
Right.
Yep. I make sure I get my hands right. and then you're last act. So
and you have to put in the money.
Yes, right. You post, so you're in. And then you get the option, the last option. So in this particular hand, all 8 other players call. Totally a 6-12 Omaha game I want to be in. And get this, Zorik has the ace of spades, deuce of clubs, tray of clubs, 6 of spades.
Wow. Nice hand.
So I think kind of what you're going to say. But.
I mean, I probably would raise just to make a massive pot. I've got a suited ace plus 3 wheels. I'm almost guaranteed the low if it comes out. You know, and if it doesn't, then I'm going to have 3 pair and could have the high half anyway. So it's a pretty killer hand.
Killer.
I'd like to raise what I think just because, you know, if they all call, they're all going to call again. It's going to be a massive pot, and we can't all have ace-deuce. So if the low gets there, it's going to be sweet. And if the flush gets there and the low gets there, oh, man, is that going to be a nice pot? So why not raise? You know, you might as well just, you know, because you're going to add to the mystique of, hey, I just scooped a pot, and now I'm raising the next one. You know, so I've definitely put some more money in, I think.
Everything Christian.
Cool.
If I'm first act, you may not want to raise because you want to build a pot and stuff. But this is like perfect story. This is why I love playing Omaha 8 with a kill. You know, you've got way too many players that are already in this pot. You know, because in limit on Omaha 8, you should have more than 3, maybe 4 players ever in a pot pre-flop. So right. You got 8. So you've already got people that are misplaying their hand.
Yeah.
Particularly, and it's on a kill. So they got to worry the fact that, one, it's already a half step higher of a game than they're used to playing, and they're still all in. And they have to know that there's probably a decent possibility that the killer's going to raise, because that's what I do. That's what most killers do. So they're really going to be playing for $12 here. So it's 3 times bigger than what they normally play.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're still in. So there are players in this hand that have no business being in this hand. So what do you do with players like that? You raise and brutalize them.
Make them uncomfortable.
I would always raise with any 4 cards at this point, just for that reason. But it's certainly more helpful the fact that we just have a super amazing hand here, right?
Yeah.
Plus, we have a hand that when the flop comes, we'll know whether we're good or bad. This is a hand, if it comes like 3 high cards that are all 3 high red cards, you know, we're done. So we're only putting 1 more bet in here if that happens, and then we're out with a clear conscience. But if any other card combination comes, we've got a lot of ways to play this hand.
Yeah, it's very polarizing.
Definitely building that pot.
Yeah. If the wrong flop comes, we can get away from it, and if the right flop comes, we're golden. So okay.
All right. So of course, as Zorig raises, he's a smart player. We only lose 2 players. Don't know why, where those players are going. So that makes us with seven handed going to the flop. About $90 to pot after the rake and drop. Flop comes ace of hearts, nine of spades, four of spades.
Oh, man.
And it checks to the player on his right who bets, and it's on us now.
This is where I struggle, though. I mean, do I want to call and see some of the other people who obviously are misplaying their hand still will come around? Or do I raise because I've got such a monster and the pot's already pretty big and I got someone who's willing to bet into this pot, so I'm not going to lose that person? Sometimes I lose sight of what I should do here. Sometimes I think it's a call, and then when the bet doubles on the turn, I think I should raise then. If you know, especially if my hand gets there. But I have so many ways for this hand to get there right now. Plus, I even have a pair. The nuts, to draw the nuts on all counts, for the low and the high. I think I would still raise here. But just sometimes I struggle with this in limit, whether or not I should raise or wait.
Well, this is usually my rule of thumb. I'm going to call here because I'm second to act, or I mean, some people are checked. So if there's been, if I'm last to act and there's been a lot of calls, then I want to build a pot. But here, I don't want to scare anybody away.
Okay.
So I'm going to call here and try to pick up a couple extra bets and see where we are. You know, if I had a weaker draw, then I'm going to raise here because the weaker my hand, the more likely I'm to raise because I have more players I want to drive out. And,
right, you narrow the field to.
Yeah. But right now, this is the push and pull. This is a pull.
Yeah.
I want to pull these people into the spot. And it's going to be mind-boggling to me if we get in the river and we don't have a decent hand of some sort with right. All these options, right?
Right.
And I love the fact that we have the six in our hand, too. So if that five comes, that's great. So now we've got the nut low wrapped up. With this many people in the hand, we're probably going to get quartered there. But we probably got the high now because everybody else is going to be thinking that they have the wheel and not realize the six is there.
Well, you still need some more help, right? Because it'd only be ace, four, five on the board.
Well, that's true, yeah.
But yeah, but I mean, you could still make a straight to the six that no one else can make on the river. So, yeah, I love this hand. Like I said, I never really... I struggle with it when I should raise or when I should pull sometimes when I have such a powerful hand like this. I may have just called because of the fact that I'm not worried about what's going to come on the turn, and I may have just called. But at the same time, if I really felt like these guys were just crazy and they're going to call anything, I might raise too. But I like your way of thinking, and I'd like to change my answer. What's that?
There's a lifeline.
Yeah, lifeline. Yeah. So, yeah, let's just call.
All right, well, let's hear what does, and he says, I want to pull as many people along as possible right now. Wow, look at this tribunology.
Yeah.
It's great.
Cool.
Everybody calls.
Wow.
Seven players of the turn. Loving this game even more. The turn is the King of Diamonds. Our board now is Ace of Hearts, Four of Spades, Nine of Spades, King of Diamonds. Not the best card for us, but it checks to us again.
Hmm. Well, I'm just gonna bet. Normally, I'd be happy to get that free card, but we still have so many outs on the river to getting some money back, and there's so much money in the pot. I would like to have a chance to beat somebody who's got, you know, a hand that could beat me if I miss on the end, but that I could beat. Somebody could just have 2-3 in their hand, you know, deuce tray, and they could be, you know, I mean, I could beat them with my aces at the end, so. Maybe I'll bet here and try to get some people out, so at least I have some sort of showdown value at the end.
Yeah, this is interesting, because my initial thought was that now it's time to bet here and drive some people out. But the more I think about it, what am I trying to do by driving people out now? There are seven players in this hand, including us. If I bet here, I might drive two or three, maybe, from a hand where... Too many people were in on the flop. Before the flop, too many people on the flop. And if I miss, my hand can't be good if I miss, right? I got an ace, terrible kicker, right? So the best I can hope for is one of my other cards to hit. And if one of my other cards hits, then I got a huge hand at that point. So I'm almost inclined, the more I think about it, and in the heat of the moment, I wouldn't bet. But more than I think about it in the heat of the moment, not in the heat of the moment, I think I'm just going to check here. I mean, I'll be happy calling when our action comes. But I'd almost rather wait till my hand gets there to put more money in this pot now.
Well, the only reason why I'm thinking of betting is because you might force out a hand that by the river you could beat for the high if your low doesn't get there, or you could
win both.
Because what if the six comes? Now you've got aces up and the nut low, and you're
well. You're still betting on the come, which is fine. Yeah. I have no problem betting on the come, but I don't think you're going to drive anybody out now. So at this point, if you're betting on the come just to continue to build a pot because you have a gajillion outs to win, scoop this thing or win whatever they have, that I can defend. But I don't think I'm betting to push people out at this point.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then I really just have to decide, you know, how big I want this pot to be if it gets there. So I can make the argument of betting because I want to build the pot up and knowing that I have a ton of outs, that's fine. And I can make the case of just checking. Because here's the thing. With this many people, is there really a possibility that this thing's going to check around?
I don't know. We'll see.
So the other problem with betting here is they could open up somebody. What if somebody has pocket kings?
Right.
Now they got a set, and now we get into a raising war. I think that's the last thing I want here is a raising war right now when I want to come. So if I don't bet, it's less likely that we're getting into a raising war. Maybe somebody will bet, and then I get one, put one bet in, and I still got the same desire of building the pot. But I don't want to get it. I don't want to have to call three or four bets cold when it gets back to me with pair of aces.
Yeah,
and a huge draw.
Okay, so you're in check. I think I'm still betting. I got so many outs, and now I'm trying to increase my chances of winning the high as well. So I'm going to try to bet.
All right. Well, Zorik says I'm ready to push some people out now, so I bet. Everybody calls to the button who raises, lose one more, and it's back to us. Six players in, massive pot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either way is going to matter. If you raise, I don't think anyone's going anywhere because, you know, maybe they'll be afraid to call two bets cold, but they've come this far and they've called all these bets and that pot is huge. I don't think they're going anywhere anyway. I don't think it matters either way. I could call or I could raise here.
Yeah, the reason I would raise is obviously somebody likes this hand, so if we raise, we open the betting to that person. So I'm more inclined at this point. I'm happy if somebody bet, and I'm happy to call, but I don't want to get into a raising war myself.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point where it's already three bet, so...
Yeah, the pot's massive at this point, so, you know, I don't think I need to make it any bigger than that, you know. All right, well, hero decides to raise. Folds to the button who raises again. And it folds to us, and we're heads up now. And we have one bet left if we want to cap it.
I don't see the point in capping it. I mean, there's so much money out there already, and you're still on the come. Might as well save a bet. It is limit.
Well, know, yeah, it's the thing. We're on the come. So at this point, I mean, you get one more bet out of him here, but if you lose, that's a $12 that you just wasted for no reason. We're heads up now, so I mean, it's not like you're going to get four other people to call, which is going to give you the pot odds to make it right. So, but again, this whole scenario is what I was trying to avoid, is getting into a raising war on the come. So I wouldn't get to this point anyhow, so I'm certainly not going to cap it. I'll just be happy.
Right. Exactly.
All right, Zorai is a little more aggressive than me, so he caps it. And the river is the 10 of hearts, so our final board is ace of hearts, four of spades, nine of spades, king of diamonds, 10 of hearts. Oopsie.
Yeah, we got aces.
And we're first act.
Check.
Yeah, you know, we lost at this point, right? So, or not lost, but I mean, it's unlikely. I mean, everything possibly could go wrong at these last...
Runner. Cards. Yeah.
Zorik says, crap. I know my opponent likes to play low cards, so I lead out. And he instantly raises.
Oh, man.
This is the problem with limit, is even if you know somebody, it always goes to this, what we talked about, was it this show or last show? I'm already confused now. It was this show, right? Even if you think somebody doesn't have a good hand, your hand's got to be better than them, right?
Yeah. I mean, your aces could be good if this guy is bluffing, but how could he bluff with just one bet and you're betting out?
Yeah, it's like, case, you know, just check and let him bet and call it and take the chance that your ace is good and let him bluff at it, you know? And if he doesn't bluff out of checks behind, I mean, that's $12 in this massive pot now. It doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to call here just because there's so much money out there that he could have been going low. He could have hit his king and thought it was good. Who knows? You know, my aces could still win me the pot. So I just can't put it down for $12 more when there's $5,000 in the middle. So
right, but the list is we put 24 in the spot that we needed.
Right, exactly.
12 more of the pot that we needed.
We could have just check called 12.
Yeah. Alright, he says, I really don't think he has a strong hand, but all I have is a pair of aces. It's only another $12 to win something like $350. So of course I call. I don't expect to win, but I am never folding here. I table my hand and say I have an ace, and even though he should have turned up his hand first, he only says, me too. Dealer says he needs to see four cards to win. I think I'm going to get the pop because this guy's a jackwagon. Finally turns his hand up and says it's a chop. Ace, deuce, tray, five.
Oh, no, we win.
And I say, that's not a chop, I scoot.
Ace, deuce, tray, five. Wow, that took a lot of guts to raise there.
Whew. He says he has to be explained that he has ace, ace, king, 10-5, not ace, ace, king, 10-9. About half of the other players at the table grumble that they should have stayed in. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, aces. Oh, man. See, that's crazy. But there you go again. You know, raising earlier when I wanted to, I thought could have forced out some people. And you ended up taking it down with aces here. And if you had gotten this guy, you know, now you've got heads up with this guy and it worked out. You're high one. That's crazy. It's possible. It's always possible.
It is always possible.
Wow. $350 pot with aces. That's crazy. Well, Zorag, only you could send in that hand, buddy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.